you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody.
This meeting is being recorded.
Sold, paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are in the known world listening to this show, live or on podcast. We'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. We are here for all of your mental health, love, relationship, attachment, and community needs. For those that would like to participate in the show, you can contact us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's B, the number 2BPSYCH, b2bpsych@gmail.com. As we always say, we'd like to thank Marshall University as well as WMUL 88.1 FM for allowing us this allowing us to have this platform to talk about mental health issues, community health, community issues, as well as attachment issues, relationship issues, and everything else in between. But as we always say, any of the comments, suggestions, or perspectives that you hear on this show are not supported by Marshall University, are not supported by WMUL, by any of their sponsors, affiliates, or supporters. But these are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we always say, take this advice at your own risk. And while this may be therapeutic, we always say what, Dr. Chapman?
This is not therapy. Your insurance company has not been billed. And you ain't paid us out of pocket, so just recognize this is not therapy, ladies and gentlemen. We do hope that you benefit from it, but go see an actual therapist if that's what you're hoping for.
Definitely, definitely. And again, to be clear, we are actual therapists, but
That's true.
We just not billing you. You're just not getting it. If we're not getting billed for it, then it's not therapy. All right. We thank you all for listening. We thank you all who continue to support and continue to send us questions, comments, suggestions, ideas. Again, if you have ideas for shows, for topics, for speakers, book reviews, whatever you may have, and we'll try to do add a little bit more variety in the future. Again, b2bpsych@gmail.com. B, the number 2, B-P-S-Y-C-H, b2bpsych@gmail.com. How are you? And as we always say, the show, we are coast to coast from West Virginia all the way to California. How is sunny California treating you, sir?
It's good. It's good. And, when my neck of the woods hits the 70s, so it's pretty nice, nice and easy.
I understand. We still hate you for it, but we understand.
Even better because my Brooklyn team, Slim Easy, Slim Reaper, I was able to pull one out last night, so it's been a good day.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen twice, though, but they pulled one out. You described it exactly right. They pulled it out. So we'll see what's going to happen with the series. I think this will be a fun series to see. It'll be a fun series to watch. Everybody's hurt. Everybody's banged up, so we'll see what they got in the tank to finish it out.
Not everybody. The Bucks ain't banged up. That's why if they lose, it's going to be even more sweet.
Yeah, I think your team is shorthanded. I think the Bucks may give them the business.
It's gonna be a hard task.
Yeah,
saying if they do lose, they got no excuses.
Yeah, this is true. This is very true. So things are great here, West Virginia, as we always say, almost heaven.
That's what y'all say.
Yeah, that's what we call it. It's almost heaven. It's not heaven, but I mean, we're almost there. Things are great. The sun is shining. Things are opening up a little bit more. The excitement of things opening up is starting to subside a little bit, and people are acting, they're acting normal.
Let me ask you something. I heard this, an article or something about it got sent to me from a friend who lives like in Ohio. And it was basically saying that in West Virginia, as an incentive to get vaccinated, people are given the opportunity to win a gun. Is that reality? Is that?
I don't know how accurate that is. I do know that not just West Virginia, but I think a lot of places are trying to give incentives to get people to get vaccinated. Now, I don't know if it's a gun, but that is the right incentive for us because we love our guns. But I saw that. I don't know how much truth there is into that, but I do know that a lot of places are contemplating some sort of incentive to get people vaccinated.
Okay.
So the question is that a good idea? You know, when you got to convince folks to, I mean, do what you got to do.
It's all psychology, you know what I'm saying? It, people obviously need convincing, not just about vaccines. That's why we have, you know, all the money that gets made over advertising. People got to be convinced to drink Sprite or Coca-Cola. I mean, it doesn't surprise me they got to be convinced to do a vaccine either.
And now, how does that make the rest of us feel? Man, if I'd have just waited. If I would have just waited, I could have got that shotgun I always wanted. You know, so... I don't know, but I mean, look, do what you got to do to get people vaccinated, and it's interesting. I'm waiting to see what the data's like on the half-life of it. You know, how long does the vaccine last? Are we gonna need boosters? Are we gonna have to go through this all over again? You know, are we gonna be able to get people to go back and get boosters when they didn't want to get the first two shots? So,
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of questions because there's that, and I don't know what it's looking like in West Virginia, but I went out yesterday and did the usual. You know, I was getting some food, forgot my mask in the car, rushed back to get my mask. But then when I get in the restaurant, like, not everybody has their mask on, and I'm like, each place I go, I'm not even sure what the policy is anymore. Like, is it a mask? Is it no mask? It just readjusting to this new world is an interesting process.
Yeah, when I go out, it's interesting. When I go out, like if I go to Walmart, if I go somewhere, if I go to the grocery store, I barely see anybody with a mask on. But I think that places that like do mental health, hospitals and stuff, I think that they still are making people wear masks, which is interesting. I know Prestera still has, you got to wear a mask sign on the front door. Mental health places, like, and not just mental health places. I think health places have, you know, places that do healthcare and stuff like that. I think, but I'm not sure. So don't quote me. But I know people out in these streets, like, you know, no mask. Folks walking around the Walmart, no mask. The grocery store, no mask. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, the funny thing about it is getting used to seeing faces again. Like, oh, okay, there's some faces. Okay, let's see what this person looks like. See what that person looks like.
That is interesting, and that's strange. I see people standing close and hugging and shaking hands. And again, are we through this is the question. You know, is this over? Are we done? Are we through this? You know, I got a friend, a homegirl. She's on her third round of COVID. She's a doctor.
Third round?
And she's caught it three times. I'm like, it's still kind of floating out there.
Yeah, of course.
So, and again, the vaccine doesn't mean you can't get COVID. It just means if you catch it, you have antibodies to fight it off. This is her third time catching COVID.
Yeah. So, unfortunate.
I mean, but she is a doctor and she works with patients and she sees and touches a lot of people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, she's a tough girl though. She'll make it through. I mean, obviously she did, but to have it three times is kind of reinforces to me that I still think that I don't know if we out of the woods. I just still think everybody need to be careful. I'm still not too big on big gatherings and big groups and stuff. Like, nah. You know, nah. Even when people say, oh, I'm vaccinated, I'm like, that still don't mean you don't have it. Just because you vaccinated. That just means you can fight it off. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. And it's interesting how, again, people's reactions, like people get mad when you talk about, like you talk about wanting to continue to be careful. Like people like still get mad. Oh, they got you. Come on, Jesus. They got you, don't they? You know, it's kind of, I'm like, who is they? You know, I'm just like, who is this they that have me? And I just don't understand what that reaction is. Even now, like, why are people still having that reaction? You know, I don't know. But we'll see. We'll see. So what's on your mind, man? What's on the agenda for the evening? What caught your eye?
Well, yeah, you know, I've been seeing a couple things come across, mainly like either my email or my Facebook screen, because, you know, I really don't watch a lot of TV, but I imagine maybe it's on TV now, too. And it's basically been this buzz in the education world. I guess it's bigger in the K-12 world about legislation that's coming out that's trying to prevent teachers. And one of the letters I originally saw was addressed from the American College Association, so it's for faculty members, but teachers trying to restrict their ability to teach about racism, specifically racism as it fits with American history, like parts of history that haven't been shared. Another thing that was related to that, I don't know if you read or had heard about that opinion op-ed that Tom Hanks did.
I know, I didn't.
He did like an op-ed, and it was talking about what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
And how come he never learned about it. And basically he was being an advocate for that particular event, but basically asking the question, how come we don't know about these things? How come these things are not talked about in regular history? And so that's a big debate right now. You know, one of the articles I read says like 20 states are trying to introduce legislation to stop that from happening, to make it so, you know, the argument is that it's divisive, like this is, you know, creating division. And so, I don't know, there's lots of things to explore there. I just wonder what your thoughts are on that. I know that you're, you know, teach a couple classes related to these things, college level, you're a professor. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I've never, this is interesting. I teach, I developed a race and culture course at the undergraduate and graduate level at Marshall, a racism, sexism in the media class, and just tons of other race stuff I've taught. And even in West Virginia, where, what is it, the population of people, not African Americans, but people of color is something like 4% or something like that. Overwhelmingly, the courses have been welcomed by the students with open arms.
Some of them have a waiting list, right?
Yeah, like there are people who, there were kids that were waiting a year and 2 years just to take this race class that I taught. And I mean, they would sit on the floor. People would try to sit on the floor. They would try to bring lawn chairs. And these were people who, all intents and purposes, were from places in West Virginia that they had one black person in the whole city, that I never had a black friend, or I never had a black professor until I met you. I never had a black teacher until I met you. I'm 20 and you're the first black instructor or teacher of any type I've ever had. I don't have any black friends, but I want to be in this class. And I would ask why, and they would say, because I know I don't know. And for me, that was inspiring. Like, as bad as things can seem, and as bad as things are in reality, it gives me hope that there are people and there are kids out there in this younger generation that know that they don't know. And this class is an elective. You don't have to take it. And they're actively seeking this information out. And how surprised they are at the little things. You know what I mean? Like, to see the shock and awe and surprise in the little things that concern race or that concern culture or that concern ethnicity. And it just surprises me that anybody would want to stop people from having that experience. I don't understand the logic or rationale behind that. Because, again, the people who are trying to stop this from happening don't necessarily represent the everyday average white person who's in college or who's on the street or who's in the community. So I just find it interesting. There are 100 people in the class. There's always somebody, one or two people who they get in just to be a disruption or they don't like the information. But overwhelmingly, 95 to 98% of the people who are in the class literally are just there to learn, and they want to know, they want to learn, and they want this information because they know they don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we know there's lots of movements. There have been, I guess, you know, in our country for a while to try to right that ship, to make sure that we have a global perspective to how we approach different things, making sure everybody gets to hear the different sides of the lens, and then even having particular classes like that class that focus specifically on it. But one of the things is kind of, I want you to just give your thoughts on is this, a large part of this is targeting K through 12. So it's basically saying that, and it's not saying like that they shouldn't teach one core specifically. What it's saying for the listeners is that the way that I understand it is we don't want you to teach how, like for example, critical race theory, which basically the idea is that there have been some things in American society that have been implemented in the structure to cause results that disproportionately affect people. And so basically when you're saying you don't want to talk about it, you don't want to talk about that. We only want to present, this is how it sounds to me, we only want to present a certain part of history. You don't want to present these other parts. And when you present those other parts, you're being divisive. You're creating conflict. You think about that.
First of all, I think that's a weak excuse. So when it's not like conflict how? Black people already know this history. So it's like when other cultures hear it, it causes conflict how? Who do they have conflict with? It's not like you're teaching black people something we don't already know, and then we're going to get mad and we're going to start demanding and ask for something. We already know this. So the question is, who is it creating conflict with?
I think their thought is that it's going to create conflict, and including these things would not just be, it'll be all people of color, you know, this will be more realization of what happened to the Native Americans, different things that happened with the Asian groups, like lots of different things that probably have not really been thoroughly dealt with in history. But one of the arguments from one of the things I read is basically that you're gonna cause the person who might be in more in a position of privilege, who just because of the way the system has been set up, has been put in a situation where they get to have an advantage because of it, whether they intend to or not. It's just part of the result of the structure of the system, that they're gonna feel some way about themselves, that they're gonna feel, you know, uncomfortable, that they're gonna feel attacked.
Well, one, what's wrong with that? Two, I think it's like what it feels like, and this is something that everybody can identify with, most people can identify with. It's like being in a relationship and you cheated on somebody, and it's like they keep bringing it up, and you're like, you just want to forget about it and move forward and go on. But you did it. There's damage that you've caused. There's trauma that you've caused. And the other person keep bringing it up, and instead of just recognizing it and owning it and talking about it, you want to say, look, that was a long time ago. Just when you gonna get over it? Forget about it it was a long time ago. Get over it. But they don't understand. Why does he or she keep bringing it up?
Yeah, I think I like.
No, that wait, analogy. But why? It's because you never apologized in the first place.
Okay, I like that analogy, and I'm gonna take it further. So it's sort of like if we use that example, there's a couple. One person cheats, and when that person cheats, they happen to be with a mistress. That for whatever reason, with this mistress, they bring a lot of benefit.
That's gotta be a mistress. Why can't it be a woman? It's why you got.
A mistress or Mr. whatever.
Thank
some
you.
Extra person, right?
There you go.
Anyways, so in their extramarital affair, there's financial gain, they're getting power from this, they're getting other things, and they happen to pass those things on to their kids. And those things are not passed on to the other kids. They're just passed on to these kids. So you what's happening is there's been some mention of what your forefathers did. I didn't do that. I'm not the one who cheated on so-and-so. That was my pop. That was my mom, whoever. Yeah, but you got the money that came from that. And everybody else is not getting the money from that. But I didn't do it. So why are you trying to make me feel bad? Yeah, I got this money. You want me not to spend this money that I have? It's not my fault that I have this money. This money was given to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't given to everybody. And that's part of the, we just want you to be aware of it.
Yeah. But again, being aware... being aware of race, being aware of racism. Station identification, this is Marshall University, WMUL 88.1 FM. Again, this is Brother to Brother, Dr. Nate Chapman, Dr. Keelan Hinton, and we're starting this discussion about critical race theory. We're starting this discussion about should race and culture be taught in courses? What are the advantages and disadvantages of teaching it? What was I saying? I had to give a station identification. What was the last thing you said?
I took your analogy and took it a little step further with the having, maybe it'll come back to you.
Yeah, it'll come back to me, but yeah. I think that this conversation is just complicated. It's complicated on so many different levels. And I think that again, and I forgot my original point, but I just want to say people just want to forget.
You were going to say something about awareness was the last thing that I said. You were going to say something about that or go in a different
direction. I forgot. But it'll come back to me. But again, it's like, I think it's like any other relationship. The reason it makes me think about the Holocaust in Germany. You have to have that conversation and you have to say, I'm sorry, in order for wounds to heal. You just like in order for I don't know if there is an apology and it's talked about openly, I don't think that we even have in this conversation. But it's just there's this effort to just say forget about it, to just say it was a long time ago. We don't do that. We can't do that in personal relationships with infidelity, let alone 400 years of slavery and all the stuff that happened to the indigenous people and all this kind of stuff. Like, you can't forgive, like, there's somebody listening right now, you can't forgive your partner. You know what I mean? Like, you mad at something they said at dinner, and you don't talk to them for 3 days. Like, you can't forgive an infidelity. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I agree with the forgiveness part, but I think the reason that it's important, particularly in K-12.
I just remember my point. The issue is this. Sorry, I mean to cut you off. The issue is having these conversations goes against the grain of it goes against the grain of what America is supposed to be about. And what America is about is, I am where I am because I've worked hard to be here. That is a cornerstone. And that is a pillar of what it means to be American and what it means to live in America. And this talk, this notion of critical race theory, that there are these things that give advantages and create disadvantages and all this kind of stuff, it goes against the grain. People want to believe that they are where they are because they deserve to be there. And listen, I'm not saying people don't work hard, and I'm not necessarily saying that there are people who don't deserve what they have, you know what I'm saying? But I think that systems are complicated.
Yeah, so thinking about the people wanting or not being able to forgive what's happened. That's understandable. But I think in addition to that, going back to, okay, so people want to believe this is America, but that's the side of America you're presenting. And this particular argument is like an American history class is predominantly, or that's kind of like where I see this argument really happening. So the question is, what is America really? And what, it's not just about forgiveness, it's about, are you presenting the whole story? And the whole story has complications. It has consequences. So if, you know, I saw this situation or analogy of it that was used, and the person on the clip was basically using a Monopoly analogy. I can't remember exactly how they said, but I'm trying to like do it the same way. So it would be like, we're playing a game of Monopoly, and you acquire property. And while you're acquiring property, you tell some of the other people on the board that they can't have property at all. They're not allowed to have property for whatever reason. And you just start acquiring it. But then as you grow on and get older and this Monopoly board becomes a real life thing, you pass that property on to your kids and their kids. And then it finally catches up where everybody else on the board can start to get property. And you, who have just been somebody who's been passed on the properties, don't understand what's wrong with this person. How come they couldn't? They weren't even allowed to be on the board at the same time. So knowing that history is important, not just forgiveness, but so you can see there's things in the system.
Yeah.
The board has not been the same, and it has consequences.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Look, this generation, I truly understand why this generation of white people in America are confused and don't get it, because they don't understand. Like, they truly don't understand. They're like, I don't understand why people are talking about race. I'll hire anybody that can pass the test. The fair thing is, everybody comes in, everybody takes the test, and this is just an example. If people of color don't score what they should, everybody has the equal opportunity to take the test. I don't understand why he or she truly doesn't get it. They don't understand. They don't understand redlining. They don't understand inequity in resources in schools. They don't understand everything that happens to us before we get to this stage to take the test for that company. When their father or their grandfather passed them the business, they didn't say in the 50s, we created these tests to keep people to disadvantage certain people because we knew we were going to pass the test. They told their kids and grandkids, this is how we do business. And that is the issue. What happened is that they just said, this is how business is done. So that is why, you know, I truly believe, I don't believe because your skin is white or because your skin is black or whatever, that you're racist or you're sexist or anything like that. But that's why culturally we continue, to bump heads, because there's so much that we don't know about each other's lives. There's so much we don't understand. Give me 1 second. Dr. Chapman's coming back into the room. So like I was saying, that is the issue. It's not because, you know, the issue is that there's just so much we don't understand and know about each other's lives or our history or how we got where we got or how we ended up where we ended up. Again, the story that we're told as children is if you work hard enough, you can be anything. And obviously, if you make it and someone else doesn't make it, then they just didn't work as hard as you. That is what we're told. And again, we don't understand how complicated lives are, how very different our communities are. We don't understand each other's lived experiences. And I just think that it's like you said, it's important for us to know. It doesn't mean, and just because you know doesn't mean that you're supposed to start just selling stuff or giving stuff away at your home. But, you know, again, this, you know, for the most part, we just look at people like they just didn't work hard enough. They deserve what they get.
Right.
So, like you said, this is why having this information and hearing these stories, I think, is so, so very important. You know, but again, as I told you in that same race class, I had a student say, unfortunately, I'm not going to create competition for my kids. He said, I'm just not. It doesn't make sense. No one would create competition for themselves. He was like, those little kids on 9th Avenue, we pray for them every day. But the fact of the matter is, I'm not going to, why would I do something that would take a scholarship away from my child? That would take opportunity away from my kids? And that's how people feel. They feel like they're going to lose something.
What I mean, okay, but what do they mean by that? Create competition by what? By people hearing the history, like hearing a complete history, that's going to create competition?
No, because the issue is this. Once we get these things out in the open, something has to be done. You think we just going to sit around and we're going to let everybody know that there are all these groups that have been systematically disadvantaged? The next step is these people going to say, right this wrong. Correct these mistakes. It's not just like, I think that people feel like it's not just going to stop there. We're not just doing this. People feel like there's an agenda. That's what it is. They feel like this is done for a reason. There's an agenda. You want this stuff out there. So, you know, you want some shifts in power. You want some shifts in control. And people feel like, at the end of the day, people ultimately feel like they're going to lose something. And what trips me out.
Power specifically.
Yeah. But what trips me out is this. It's something that I talk about in my class all the time. I look at my white students and I say, you know, y'all not white. Like, y'all got tricked. You're not white. If you can't control where people go to school, if you can't control the stock market, you ain't white. White supremacy is something that'll catch all of us. If there's a draft, they gonna draft my black son. And they gonna draft, you know, white Bobby that stay across the street. But they might not draft somebody they might not draft a Bush. As an example. You know what I'm saying? They might not draft a Clinton or a Bush. But they gonna draft white Bobby across the street and they gonna draft my son. So, you know, again, you know I'm a conspiracy theorist. I think that chaos is built in the system for a reason. Like, at the end of the day, they got us all fighting each other. And when they raise tuition, they raise everybody's tuition. Like, it's everybody. I think that everybody values from knowing a complete history. And again, making it equal for somebody that doesn't look like me, you'd be surprised at how that trickle down will affect me. Even if I'm not a member of that culture in some way, shape, form, or fashion. You know, people talk about issues with the police. You know, again, nobody wants to defund the police. That's, I don't know where that came from. That's ridiculous. But I mean, abolish the police or whatever, you know. But when people are saying, take a step back, and let's make sure that the practices are in line with keeping people safe, that's not just a black thing. That's an everybody thing. That's going to keep your son safe, too. Like, we all benefit from these things. Sometimes we just don't see how. But the issue is, people are tired of being told of what they have done to other cultures and other people, which is understandable. But the fact of the matter is, it's kind of like cheating on somebody in a relationship and never saying you're sorry. It ain't gonna never go away until you address what you did and until you apologize. Like I said, there are people who will listen to this show right now. You can't get over that your partner cheated on you. You can't get over what somebody said at dinner. Like, that's it. And two, I think that people feel like there's an agenda. That is ultimately what it is. It's not going to just stop it. These things don't stop at a conversation. As long as we keep teaching these things, people keep crying and complaining about their inequities, and they need to be fixed. They need to be adjusted. So you start when they're babies. You cut this information out when they're kids. By the time they get grown, they won't know. And the next generation won't know either. The way you cut out, like, the way you stop stuff is you just stop it with the kids. And you just let it die with the old folks. And just old stories that people tell.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's lots of other things that I'm thinking. But I guess the other issue is, well, one of the articles I was reading, the one that I sent you, is really approaching it from the college professor angle. And I mean, I can't see legislation really stopping universities from being able to do it. But the point it was making is that, you know, the point of education is to create a civic citizen, right? Somebody that's informed about things and what's going on. And trying to do it through legislation, I guess, whether it's a professor or a regular educator, it's taking power away from the educator. Is besides the whole racism point, just that, using legislation to determine what's in the classroom. How do you feel about that?
Obviously, to some degree, that's happened. Like, we can't go in a classroom and say anything. Mm-hmm. So to some degree, it already happens. But the notion, I mean, obviously, I don't like it. I mean, that's why I'm here, and that's why I wanted to be here, was the freedom to teach the curriculum, but also bring in all these other parts and pieces that they may not get anywhere else. So that's part of why we're here, is that academic freedom is to hold the perspectives and research what we want, and hold those, you know, hold the perspectives that we like, and to be able to share those things to make them think about the world. The issue is they feel like education is indoctrination. And I don't see what we do as that. Mm-hmm. You know, I always try to present as many different parts and pieces and perspectives of an argument as I can. My job is to teach you how to think. It's not to think like me. You're like, all my students know, if you don't like what I'm saying or you don't believe me, say so. You're not going to hurt my feelings. It's not going to affect your grade. But I'm here to learn and grow just like you're here to learn and grow. So we just want people to be able to think about the world, but you can't think about the world if you don't have all the parts and pieces to what's going on.
Yeah, I see it as we're teaching, you know, at this level, as a academician, a professor, we're scientists. We're scientists and we're, you know, instructors, shamans. You know, we're giving knowledge, but we're not just giving it without some type of method. We're teaching somebody to think about variables. Even if we're not actually walking them through a research process, we're telling them to think about information, look at all the variables, and make a decision. And in order for them to be able to do that, they need lots of variables. We can't just be like, oh, we're going to just, well, you know, we don't like the way this variable looks, so we're going to, like, keep that out of there. I mean, because how does that look in practical thinking? The person has to think about just a simple thing like a budget. They may not like how much one bill is, but if they don't consider that bill, they're going to be broke or not prepared to really deal with it. So they need to consider all the things that actually exist so that they can make a proper decision. It makes sense with bills. Why does it not make sense with creating a civically minded citizen?
Yeah. What confuses me about all this, it's not like, I don't think that cohesion in America is hurting in any way. I guess I could see this if people like was running around hate and they hated to be American and they hated America and they felt like cultural cohesion was being torn apart at its fabrics or something in America. Like I don't understand. The whole point is that we don't want to talk about anything that appears to be a blemish on who we are. You know, I think it's okay. It's just like your family members. It's okay to like your mama, but she do some stuff sometime that get on your nerves.
No, you made me think about that, right? Like, You know, in some families, I feel like this is more families of color, but it may be lots of families. You know how family business goes. It's something that you can't really share with everybody, but sometimes if you don't know all the business, then you're not fully informed. Like, trying to keep something from somebody in the family and not letting them know all the details doesn't help them be a good active member of the family.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. I think that's a larger part of all of this. There are a lot of things that are slowly being written out of textbooks and have been for a while, and we don't even know it. Like, I want to say years back, Texas started writing slavery out of history books in high school. They don't say we didn't steal California, we expanded. You know what I mean? Like, all of these little words change and shape the way we think about who we are. I just don't understand what good it does for people to not know. I think that people will still love America. They still gonna pay the same amount of taxes. They still gonna feel the same way about paying taxes.
Yeah.
And it's not gonna make an iota of a difference in people's lives. I just don't understand. That's why none of this makes sense to me. It will change nothing. Like, it will change nothing. Like, people of color will still always know and realize that there's some imbalance somewhere and continue to fight for the system to be balanced or continue to talk about it in some way, shape, form, or fashion. So, like, what does this... I think that what good is done by keeping this from... What good is done by keeping this from other cultures, particularly white people? Like, what is the benefit of that? And maybe it's because, remember, we talked about before in different shows, this is a group of kids, and particularly a group of white kids in this generation that seem to really be moving in a direction in a progressive direction. They want to move in an inclusive direction. You know, a lot of those racial issues that our generation dealt with and their generation before them, like, they don't want to deal with those things. Like, they really look for equality. So maybe they feel like if this generation found out, that they would be inclined to do something and change something. And maybe there's somebody somewhere that doesn't want it. I'm not saying this. I'm just saying, I'm trying to theorize what will be the good in not teaching race or teaching critical race theory or talking about race and culture.
I can't see it either. And I'm thinking about the people that, friends that I've had, that I've come here from a different country, and were really not schooled on American history. And so since they didn't know American history, they really didn't have a good understanding of how racism operates in the United States. And it's not just about those things that make people feel uncomfortable, because there's a fear that they might have some of their own bias, which we all do. But there are things that are a part of the history, depending on where you're at in the United States, and particularly with different states, right? If you don't understand, besides all of the human rights and violations when it comes to slavery, but understanding that, okay, tobacco, cotton, those were supplies. The Southern economy was run by those type of things that had an impact on the money. Even things that still exist today have a long lineage to money that was created by them. That's the same thing with looking at structures and how those different things that have been put in place have had an impact. Now, it's not just about racism, like the rah-rah. It's also about, like, this is how it affects what's here today. There are things that are in place. The history matters because it has created certain structures, foundations, financial systems, a whole bunch of different things like that exist. We can try to change them now, or go through the process of trying to change them now, but understanding where they came from is going to give you the context you need to really understand what's going on.
And again, I totally agree with everything, but the issue is that people feel like it's not just going to stop with a story. Everything is done with an agenda. Everything is done for a reason and with a purpose. And they're saying, you don't just want to tell a story. When this story is told, somebody going to ask for some bread. Somebody's going to ask for some money. and you're going to ask me to give up something that I have because I didn't deserve it. You're going to say I don't deserve what I have, and we're going to become socialist all over again. We're going to start taking from the rich and giving to the poor. And that ultimately, that is at its core, that is what it is. If people knew that this would stop at a story and a class, they'd be fine. I promise you, they'd be fine. But they continue to hear this socialism, this taking away from rich people. Rich people are rich people, people who have money. The more money you make, the more taxes you pay. That's not fair. Like, they already start. People who don't have jobs, who pay for their health insurance? Me. I'm tired of it. You see what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying me, but you see what I'm saying? So, like, yeah. People are saying this is not going to stop at a conversation. These are quote, from their perspective, these are socialists who are doing this, and they have an agenda, and their agenda is eventually to redistribute wealth. I think that ultimately is where people think, and they're just like, we need to stop this conversation altogether, because at the end of the day, I ain't own slaves, and you ain't pick cotton, and we both go to school, and we both take tests, and if you pass the test, you good, then you excel, and if you don't, you don't. And that's how people feel, I think.
Well, it's an interesting point, because I think the root of that point is I have been used to having the power. Don't be mad at me because how I got it. I don't feel that way personally. But also don't take my power away.
Yeah, I think that for some people, I think subconsciously it goes deeper than that. I think that people truly understand, to some degree, I think they understand the live lives of people who don't look like them. Not just black people, but people who don't look like them. Don't take my power away because I don't want to live like that. I don't want to go there. I love Jane Elliott. I know you've seen that clip where she asked people in the audience, if there's nothing wrong, if black people don't have it hard, how many of y'all would change places with a black person? And nobody raises their hand. So either consciously or subconsciously, you understand to some degree. You may not understand all the nuance, but to some degree, you understand that some cultures, some people have it worse off than others. You understand there's a hierarchy. And when we start redistribution of this wealth of resources, which people think that is the ultimate goal of it, I ain't got nowhere to go but down. You ain't talking about giving me nothing. You see what I'm saying? I think that's how people are thinking. You're not talking about giving me anything. You either going to bring people up to my level or you're going to drop me down. And why would I want that to happen?
Well, that's the other interesting part of it, because I think, you know, we've been focusing a lot on how it's affected the structures in terms of how racism is built in. But the other part is there's not been talk about contributions that other people of color have had in history. That's just been not mentioned and, you know, just now being kind of discovered, you know, maybe not discovered, but mentioned. And that's a part of it too. So it really, that part's not necessarily about structure and racism. It's just, hey, we were there too and we contributed some things too. And can that be acknowledged?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, what do you lose? I just don't understand what is lost by having this information there. And ultimately, I think that we've hit the nail. I think that we've hit a lot of the main points. It just ultimately comes down to what is your agenda? Because as long as we continue to talk about it, I think that some people feel like there's a guilt trip being put on us. That was a long time ago. That's ultimately the issue. If you ask the average person on the street, they're like, that was a long time ago. Why am I being made to feel bad for something that I didn't do? And I understand from their perspective, I understand that feeling. You don't understand why I should be made to feel bad about what somebody else did two or three generations before. I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. It's related, but unrelated, but I want to hear your thoughts on it, because we teach different classes. It's not just these. I teach a lot of classes about mental health. And sometimes I have students that will say to me, oh, well, can I avoid this particular topic because it's triggering to me? Yeah. And this incident with the concern for the racial conversations, one of the arguments is that they're going to feel uncomfortable. So what is your thought about, in the pursuit of gaining knowledge, a student being uncomfortable, regardless of what the topic is? What are your thoughts on that?
I one of the first things that I tell my students the first day is this is not a daycare. That is exactly what I tell them. We are here to think. And we're going to talk about race. We're going to see, I'm a developmental psychologist. Development deals with process. The process of who you are. The process of how community and what you ate and the job your parents had and the job they didn't have and the process of race and culture, how all of these things interact with each other to make and mold us into who we are. Any developmental class is about process, the process of people. How did you get from point A to point B? What happened in the middle? That's what we do. And I tell them first day, we're going to talk about sexual orientation and race and culture and ethnicity and everybody got a voice. You know what I'm saying? And this ain't a daycare. We're going to talk about love and relationships and your mom and your dad that didn't come home and the dad that was overbearing and the mom that didn't talk to you. And why don't you have any black teachers and how you feel about having a black teacher now? We're going to talk about all that. So if you, you know what I'm saying? We're here to grow and evolve. This is all done to grow and evolve and make you a thinker. And if you don't like it, peace and blessings to you. This might not be the class for you, but this ain't a daycare. And I repeat it over and over again. We're going to be, you know, and there's a difference in, you know, sometimes people feel like if you're making them uncomfortable, you're being disrespectful.
Yeah.
Like in their head, they shift that into they're being attacked or they're being disrespected because you're saying something that they don't like or they don't agree with. We can agree to disagree. I'm not going to yell at you or scream at you. I call all my students Mr. So-and-so or Miss So-and-so. We don't have to agree. We're not here to like each other. I tell them all the time, we're not here to like each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here for you to like me. I'm here to give you everything that I got to help give you, to make you a better, make you a better person and a better thinker. If you don't like me, we don't have to like each other. Like, I let all that out in the beginning.
Yeah, I think that we are in the same, on the same accord on some of those things. It is something that I grapple with because, you know, with my topics, we're talking about mental illness and, you know, a good percentage of the population is affected by them. So, yeah, saying that it's triggering, it probably is triggering. But in my practice as a mental health professional, what I've realized to be true is that there are certain things that get aggravated or exasperated by avoidance. You know, avoidance of a thing is something that maintains anxiety behavior. Like, I'm not going to get on the elevator because I'm afraid of heights. There's lots of ways to try to deal with those things, but sometimes not actually experiencing the thing is what causes the symptoms to remain.
Agreed.
And the other thing is, you know, from your developmental process, I know you can appreciate this. Adaptability or the ability to adapt is sometimes created by actually having to encounter something. Then when you encounter it, you grapple it, you digest it. And then you have to go ahead and assimilate this new information. And that's what gives you the process to learn how to adapt. But if you never have anything that's going to cause you to feel uncomfortable, I mean, muscles don't grow if they don't tear. It's the same kind of thing. And not to sound like you guys are probably thinking, like, he's ruthless. I think that's really just a part of the growth process, you know, and it's something that sometimes we think we can't handle it, but a lot of times we can handle it. We just have to be able to be uncomfortable for some period of time until it becomes more comfortable.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder if that's a generational thing too. I just knew when I was in school that I was gonna deal with some professors who didn't like me for who I was. I was gonna deal with all kinds of stuff, and I was gonna hear all kinds of information. And you just knew it was just a part of the educational process. And now, a lot of times, if students hear something they don't like, or they hear a perspective that they don't like, if somebody, and this might be another show, this might be another show for another day. Does conservative thought have a place in higher education?
Yeah, that'd be an interesting topic.
And I don't even know if we might have to get that conversation cleared before we have it, because I want to keep my job. But the question is, are universities petri dishes for growing liberal progressive thought? Because what I've noticed, and again, I try to be as balanced as I can. What I noticed is my students, and this is just an observation. This is not my opinion. This is just an observation. My students who think more conservatively, you know, other students, they get put in a position that they have to start to defend their way of thinking. students who are conservative. And what I've noticed as an observation from university, so it makes you think, you know, do certain ways of thinking have a place in university?
I think that is a valid point. It's, I think the challenge for us is to present two sides of the information as long as those sides of information have scientific evidence. But in conjunction with that, we're also dealing with the marketplace of thought. So not all that's going to be, not all the sides are going to be having scientific evidence behind them. But how do you help someone really think about whatever their thought process or philosophy is unless they can share it? And if they can't share it openly, whether they're conservative, liberal, this religion or that religion, or come from this background or that background, then it becomes a problem. If they can't share it and have those conversations that could lead to a new perspective, it's difficult. I think that's one of the most difficult things we have to do as facilitators, constructors of spaces where thoughts can be shaped and grown and pruned.
Yeah. Years ago, the idea trans stuff started to, you know, really become, when the trans voice really started to, it started to gain ground. Yeah. You know, obviously, teaching development, I want to talk about it. And I'll never forget, I had a student ask me, why are we talking about this? Why are we talking about this in here? And my response was, and I say it in every class now, and students know that this is my mantra. If we can't talk about this, who's supposed to talk about it? What is it? 30% of people graduate with a bachelor's degree or something? 14? These are just guesstimations.
Yeah. I heard
14% get master's degrees. 1% get PhDs. Like, you are the academic elite. If y'all can't talk about it, if we can't talk about this, who's supposed to talk about it? Where are we supposed to have these conversations? And you are the thinkers of our society, and y'all don't want to talk about it? Where are we supposed to talk about this kind of stuff? Where are we supposed to tease apart ideas and what's happening now and what are the consequences of what's happening? I mean, like, this idea of, in this fear of just having the conversation is unbelievable sometimes.
Yeah.
But what's funny is, you know, the skills you develop to try to walk people through stuff, like the gimmicks that I have to come up with just to get people to buy into conversations, is unreal. Especially when you're talking about race, and especially when you're talking about sexual orientation, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that one of the other things that you can't talk about something and totally separate yourself from it. At least I can't, and I know most people would like to. So when I'm bringing up these topics, particularly around race and culture, I'm also aware that I'm a black man talking about this, and a lot of times in a predominantly white space, and trying to like see both sides, and like it's a real challenge, but a challenge that's necessary, because like you said, if we can't have these conversations in this space with the 30% of people that are getting the bachelor's degree, with the 8% of people getting the master's degree, with the 3% of other doctorate degrees, 1% of PhDs, where are we going to have these conversations? And maybe those conversations will bleed from our conversations into these other conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just don't, again. This is interesting to me, because this notion or idea of writing race out of history and writing it out of history books, changing the language that we use, started years ago. Like, it's just really catching fire now. Like, 8-9 years ago, they was changing textbooks, showing slaves smiling with peach baskets on their back. Like, you know, I mean, you ask anybody, nobody knows. Like, there's so many great, nobody knew who Fred Hampton was. Nobody know who Father Divine is. Like, nobody knows who these people are. You know about Martin Luther King and Harriet Tubman. This started a long time ago. They talk about two people, Harriet Tubman and Martin Luther King, and that's it. But this notion idea of writing stuff out, changing language, we didn't take California, we expanded. Like, this play with words started years ago. We just catching up and noticing now. So, I don't know. I don't think that it doesn't make anybody better to keep people in the dark. There is a whole, like I said, I understand why some, I truly do see why some people and why some people don't get it, because they got black friends. They got black friends. They go to school with black people. We all go to the same malls. My friend got a biracial baby. Like, what is this talk of things being unequal? I don't understand. What is everybody? We all take the same test. What's the, you know what I'm saying? And they like you said, they don't understand all these other variables and all these other nuances that play a part in why we end up where we end up, why the road may be harder. You know, why you got a 26 and why I got a 17 on ACT. Yeah, we ended up here, but why does all that matter? Because that 26 got you a scholarship and I'm taking out these loans. Like, there are all these different things that, you know.
Yeah, and I know we're running out of time, but that whole thing right there, just the part about the loans versus not loans, and we'll just, for the sake of this argument, to keep it short, take it up to the doctorate level. Like, we'll just say, right, that the one group that has had the money that has put them in a situation where without a scholarship, they can pay for their kid to get to college, and the other one doesn't. Guess who's coming out with a mortgage loan? And that's going to be behind the eight ball. And that is a result of some, possibly a result of some systematic things that have been in place that create those opportunities. I'm not saying it's always like that, but sometimes it is. And that keeps expanding. That's why wealth keeps growing. And when you see the wealth gap, you don't understand it. There's reasons behind it. It's not just like, oh, they're not good with money. That's more than that.
Yeah, at the end of the day, life is about, in that same race class, we do a whole 2 weeks on money. And what really matters in life, it ain't what you make. Non-merit wealth matters. What's non-merit wealth? What your folks can pass down to you. So, like, the point is that I think at one point black people were worth, from an asset perspective, 1 cent to every dollar that a white family was worth, 1 cent. So black people don't have anything, and they don't have anything to pass down to their kids. I think one out of every four white people received an inheritance of $144,000, worth $144,000. One out of 25 black people received an inheritance, which is worth about $35,000. Now, these numbers are old. This was years ago. But the point is this. Life is about what can be passed down to you. If your grandmama got a trailer and she give it to you, I know you complain about it, but you don't pay rent now. If your dad got a 1982 Mercury Lynx to give you, guess who don't have a car note now? So it's like, life is about what do you have to give to your kids. And it's like, black people historically, it all started with, you couldn't have anything. You didn't have anything to pass down. So what happens is, you said it perfectly. I don't have anything to give my kids, so they're going to have to take out loans. Now they work hard and they get a PhD, but they got to spend all of their money paying these loans back. So when their kids go to school, they ain't got nothing to give them, so they got to take out loans. And I'm not saying that this don't happen to white folks. I get that this happens to white people as well, you know, but we're talking about proportions. The mass majority, the large proportion of black people are disproportionately poor. There are more poor white people in America, but that's because they're more poor. There are more white people. Black people are disproportionately poor, and it's because of things that systematically happened in the past that continues to. You know, you're constantly digging yourself out of this hole. Now, nobody is saying that, you know, everybody white got to go sell a car and give it to a black person. We're not saying that. But we're just saying it's important to understand these cycles and these systems that sort of affect the people around you. That's all. It's just important to understand people's lived experiences and why people are in a hole or why people can't go to school because they can't afford to send their kids to school. All these things are just important for you to know. So, I don't know. To be continued.
Yeah, you brought out the good stuff at the end. Like, I feel like we could really be educating people about those things you just mentioned. But.
You know what that means? Next week, part 2. Maybe next week we'll talk about the wealth gap. You know, maybe we'll talk about the education gap and the wealth gap. I think those are two things to talk about. Those are two really good things to talk about, just so people can know, you know. So, again, for those who have any questions, comments, or suggestions, we appreciate anybody that stays and listens and that's open to the conversation. We appreciate you, you know. As Dr. Chapman always says, man, it's necessary to have these hard conversations. You got to have these hard conversations so we can all grow. Believe it or not, we will all benefit from having these conversations and having these discussions and fighting through these uncomfortable feelings on all sides. So again, questions, comments, suggestions, b2bpsych@gmail.com, b2bpsych@gmail.com. Again, we always thank WMUL and Marshall University for giving us a platform to talk about mental health issues, community issues, whatever's happening now, issues, as we always say. Any questions, comments, or suggestions that you hear on the show not supported by Marshall University or WMUL, any of their supporters, affiliates, or sponsors, but are the sole perspectives of myself as well, myself, Keelan Hinton, and Dr. Chapman. We just thank you all just for continuing to support the show so we can have these conversations that people desperately want to hear. Where else can you hear this type of conversation? There are not a lot of places on public space, on public radio, that you can hear, especially in West Virginia, that you can hear these kinds of conversations. So, you know, again, we always, I know I keep saying it, but I'll say it again. We thank Marshall and we thank WMUL for seeing the importance of having us on the air and giving us a platform to talk about these things, to stir these conversations so people can conversate with the people around them. We appreciate it. So again, as I always say, leading out, you know, graveyards are full of regret and potential. When you die, make sure you die empty. You know, all the things you want to do, make sure you try to do them. The people that you love, make sure they know. And as we always say, make sure that you are doing something in your life that sets your soul on fire and makes you feel alive. Okay. And as I always say, you know, as best as we can, try to be good to each other. Okay. I love you all. Anybody that's listening, anybody that doesn't agree with anything we've said, I love you too. Peace and blessings, and Dr. Chapman will take us out.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't tell him to kick rocks. All right, so I guess that how I would like to end this is just to make it more personable to you and the people in your life. You know, we're all a part of, I believe when I think of culture, I think culture is very individual. Obviously, you're part of a group, you know, that's you got a racial group you're part of, an ethnic group you're part of. You probably pay homage to the state that you're in, the city that you're in, the job that you're in. But all of that is encompassed by who you are as a person. So but really trying to know people. The debate today was kind of about rather the legislators are trying to stop this from being a part of a curriculum. But if we're not having honest conversations about the history and how racism has been a part of American history, then we can't see the consequences. But I'd like you to do is just think about the people in your life and the history that you create and have with them. And maybe this goes down to your family unit, you know, not being completely honest about what happens in your family unit or the part of the group that you're a part of can really stifle how you grow in the progress in the future and with your own progress. So if you can find some space to take an honest look at where you are, to be upfront and honest about the history and the implications of that history. In some cases, when you don't do that, it turns into trauma, and that trauma shows up in psychological consequences. So you might find a way to help somebody relieve some of that trauma by being upfront and honest about these histories and sharing it and talking about it and helping somebody work through it. So until we see you next time, peace and blessings.
The recording has stopped.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.